taking us to India.
Yeah.
Whatever. Why are North Africa?
What happened to him, do you know?
He's up here. He's still in America.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. He's with, I'm not sure who he's with now, but he was with Trans Mountain Pipeline for a while.
You ever heard of
Personnel Thompson was his name.
Do you know his initials? That would be lots of Thompsons.
Can't think of any. Yeah. It would be fairly simple for me to.
Well,
Gordon Thompson, I believe. Gordon, I think was his name. Gordon Thompson.
And then 6 weeks. Now, let's see, but by the time you left for Australia, the year presumably would be getting on. I mean, it'd be well into 44. Well into 44, maybe the latter part.
No. Oh, let's see, that's right. It was 44, that's right.
That's right.
That's correct. Well into 44.
And then you go down to Australia and do more training down there.
We trained at Melbourne initially, at a camp outside of Melbourne, a special camp.
Was the group together by this time?
Our group.
This group here.
Yeah.
And by this time, presumably too, you'd be under what? Under British Army or Australian Army?
Australian. SRD. Special Reconnaissance Department, SRD.
At what point did you get into Borneo?
Well, when this thing was washed, Kendall left for points unknown.
Yeah.
Let's see. King, Sergeant King, who's not a wireless man, Shu, myself, and Norman Lowe volunteered for an operation in Borneo. Strictly, our end was strictly communication in this operation.
Mm-hmm.
That operation, there was an operation name assigned, CMUT 4, I remember very well.
CMUT
4.
CMUT.
CMUT means ant.
Oh, I see.
Number 4.
Yeah. Did you win? By yourselves or with a commando group or drop by parachute? Or?
Yeah, the intention was to drop by parachute.
Mm-hmm.
But we went in by flying boat. Oh. Landed right on the Rotterdam River, some miles north of Cebu. 20-30 miles north of Cebu.
Yeah.
At a settlement there.
And just sort of scrambled out of the plane onto the, to the settlement and away you go. Now that would be presumably quite late in 44 at that time.
Quite late.
Yeah.
By that time we joined up with another English group. Oh, no. We went in with an Australian by name of Major Soshin. William W.L. Soshin. And he brought along a couple of infantry types, you know, that had also been doing some training.
Mm-hmm.
We went in together.
How big a group would that be?
Oh, it's a small number. Oh, in all, less than 10 people, all total. But there were already groups operating in that, on the Rajang River before we went in. You see?
This, my knowledge, I must say, of the Pacific War is very limited. How many Japanese would there be in Borneo at that time? Borneo presumably had been bypassed by MacArthur, is that right?
Oh, no. The 9th Divisional Headquarters was at Labuan, British North Borneo. And remember the Japanese and the Dutch at Balikpapan? Japanese landed in Balikpapan, Dutch East Borneo.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And they had the concentration camp there. And there was another concentration camp at Kuching.
Mm-hmm.
So our job was to go in, what kind of map Rajang River almost divides Sarawak on an east-west basis. And west of that, down towards Singapore, right opposite Singapore, was the town of Kuching, which is a big settlement. The Japanese had a big POW camp there. And in the mouth of the river, they had a garrison, 400 strong, something like that. And in British North Borneo, the Americans had landed there, so the Japanese had withdrawn down the coast, had a garrison at Kuching, and had the big center, had the garrison of Cebu, and had the big base, Singapore, Kuching.
So this when you say the headquarters of the 9th Division, that's the 9th Japanese Division?
No, 9th Australian. 9th Australian
Fighting League. 9th
Australian. 9th Australian Division, 9th American Division. 9th U.S. 9th U.S.
And did you remain there for the remainder of the period?
Until VJ Day.
What happened to the other groups? You say that, I believe you said there would be about four from that group. That
they roamed around Australia.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah.
I see. He mentions here, in this final paragraph, he says, as background to this report, it is well to name certain personalities. The Canadian government contact during my period of training in Canada was Lester Pearson. Our SOE representative was Herbert Sitchell, who was attached to our SOE office in New York. Our British signals instructor was a Major Hugh Legg, who later joined the British Foreign Service. Reference is made to Colonel Hugh Allen, ADC to General Perks, and Colonel St. Louis.
Yeah, A.R. St. Louis.
Yeah.
He's now no longer living.
Darn it.
He was a signal officer of Pacific Command.
Yeah.
I mean, it was he that really got me interested to join up, really. A.R. St. Louis had been out in China for years. And he had, in a private capacity, done a lot of communications work for the Chinese Nationalist Government. And so he had all kinds of stories about China, and I used to sit up hours on end listening to them, hair-raising experiences that he had. And Archie St. Louis was a well-known in Pacific Command. He was a man of action. Extremely active, and it was not for A.R. St. Louis, I often wonder whether I would have joined or not. You know, we went to Nanaimo and took training, and two of us, myself and a fellow named Dewar Cook, were the only two that graduated in signal.
This
qualified as a signal officer, as the second lieutenant. Not Gordon,
Hibben,
Nanaimo.
Yeah. When you were at Ottawa, I wonder if you knew a chap. I know there's a hell of a lot of officers and signals, but this fellow, if I remember correctly, used to operate out of Ottawa. It seems to me that he joined up with the artillery and then he went into signals. A fellow by the name of Cunningham, Robert Cunningham, Bob Cunningham. He was a captain and a major, I think. Yeah. I'm just wondering, he's a cousin of my wife's. Then he was on the, these gentlemen were both helpful to our Okanagan training program. Last but not least was Captain Roger Cheng, leader of the Chinese group. And then he says, his reward has just come through, and I understand he is now an honorary ADC to the new Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia.
I don't think it had anything to do with
it. Yeah.
I think when Nicholson uh, Mythicism was supported very strongly and centered by Chinese. So behind him, there were some Chinese people doing the groundwork for him.
Oh, I see.
And I think in recognition of this thing, the Chinese support and the recognition of the minority support.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Nicholson has been very conscious of discrimination through the years,
mm-hmm.
the legal profession, so on and so
yeah.
forth. And I think he did a lot of work to fight discrimination at all levels.
Do you think of Nicholson now or Perks?
No, I'm talking about Nicholson. I'm referring to this ADC.
Yeah. Account. But you were ADC to Perks, weren't you?
No. ADC to Nicholson.
I remember seeing you over there when Perks was...
Never been.
Were you coming home from?
No.
How old was you?
No.
That's myself. Yeah. Then he was on to...
So, a lot of people felt it was that, but it's actually, I think, the fact that... I think Nicholson and the knew of me
mm-hmm.
and thought, well, hell, it'd be a good gesture
yeah. Yeah.
in recognition of the minority support.
Well, by gosh, Perks, no, because it was Perks who mentioned...
I know Perks.
Yeah. That'd be in a different category.
I've met him on numerous occasions after the
yeah.
war.
I see.
And when I did meet him, I reminded him about this event.
What
of the presenting?
Oh,
presenting the incendiary.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never did get. I never did have too much conversation with him, so mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he placed me.
Well, you know, it was he who twigged me on you.
Well, then subsequently, or recently, within the last few years, I probably had a little more exposure to him.
Yeah, that could be.
And this has come up in his mind, I guess.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
That could be.
But I remember immediately following the war, although it may be difficult, you know, with Perks here. He may remember, but he wouldn't.
It's amazing.
He wouldn't express any surprise or anything.
Well, that you know, may I have his memory when I'm his age, put it that way. Because he's told me stuff, you know, in World War I, for example, and indeed earlier, that I have later checked out, and it's amazing. Just astounding. You know, I mean, he can yatter, shall we say, about a battle that occurred back in 1916 or 1917, you can say, you know, my regiment was here, and on my left was such and such a battalion, on my right was such and such a battalion, and I'll write to Ottawa and get the war diaries, and there'll be, you know, on the right of so-and-so, and on the left of so-and-so, and you'll have it down cold.
I'll tell you a little story. I didn't see it with my own eyes, but I heard of it, but subsequently, we that went to India left camp a little bit before the other chaps.
Mm-hmm.
See, we came out here and boarded a plane the way we went. Sergeant McClure had some stores of RDX, with the popular form of dynamite.
Yeah, right? I remember.
And some munitions and so on. And I think Kendall said, look, get rid of it. So he blew it up. And then blowing it up, he set the whole damn mountain on fire. And this is the instructor. We never lived that one down.
Oh, crazy.
So,
I guess this
operation was intended to be either landed on the mainland by air or else. Did another phase of what we call paranaval training, and this was leading up to landing from submarine.
Now, where was this being in Melbourne or in Australia?
Well,
or?
This was in Australia.
Yeah.
So we did do some work or with rubber boats and you know, and these Alaskan type Eskimo type kayaks and so on.
Well, tell me, once you did get to Borneo and all that sort of thing, and started mucking about, what were you able to do? What were you able to accomplish? I mean, you sort of spying the Japanese and all that sort of thing, or what?
Oh,
radio it back?
At that time, we were part of this group, and we had several radio stations, and were in contact with what we call our headquarters.
Yeah.
At 9th Divisional Headquarters in Labuan, by radio. We had established contact, and we're working this link, and I remember just a matter of days before EJ Day, we were going to take a crack at this garrison, you see.
Oh, is that fine?
So, in our plans was to, we were calling for these, what do they call them, fighters that had the half-inch cannon, but were they not hurricanes?
The lightning T something,
yeah,
or
something like
P-18,
that.
I think.
No, what do they call them? P something. I was going to say P-58 or P-52 or P something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, these half-inch cannons.
Yeah.
And we'd already decided to call for, you know, a strike by a wing of this particular command in order to set the stage for a shot at these people. They just come in and blow up everything, you know, shoot up everything, so that we could get in position to take a crack at this thing.
Yeah.
By that time, we joined up with Australians, and we had they had been training the natives with the use of weapons, firearms.
Oh, yeah.
So we were well prepared.
Yeah. Were you yourself in a location where you could look down in this camp, or would it be other people who would be gathering up the information and feeding it to you, and you sort of using the wireless to get it back?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Did you meet any other Canadians out there, by the way?
Not that I, well, I mean, when we came back to Australia, finally there was a group of, a company of Royal Canadian Signals that had just returned from Darwin, so they were out there doing communications with.
Yeah,
so roughly that's the story, and I don't know what help it would be.
Well, it's interesting, you know, from the way you have to write, whether it be a biography or a history or what have you, it's almost like putting together pieces of a crossword puzzle. But it's good, too, to get your double check. For example, I'd much rather rely on your description of Perk to visit as being half a day, which certainly sounds more logical than Kendall saying that you were there, or saying that Perk was there for 4 days. It does sound much, you know, for GOC Pacific Command to go out for 4 days in a secret camp in the middle of nowhere.
We didn't have that big a camp in the first place. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we had a really comprehensive camp. Then I could understand it. We didn't. We had no facility for it.
Yeah.
Or for any camp for that matter. As far as I was concerned, this Okanagan Lake Camp, which we called Goose Bay, a camp amongst ourselves.
Goose Bay?
Goose Bay, we had a name for it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the true name.
Yeah.
Was purely a stepping stone to all the other things that followed. It was initial training. It completely reoriented us, you know, what this was all about. survival as well as doing a job, you know.
Yeah, that I can well appreciate. Yeah.
I mean, I ate with the men and lived with the men and worked with the men, you know.
I wonder how many went to after you. I wonder, you know, I wonder how long the camp remained in existence.
It didn't. It was folded immediately after. As I told you, McClure blew up the
mountain. That was that?
Sure, and set half the mountain on fire.
It's amazing, you know.
I guess by that time it was late summer.
But with you fellows popping off ammunition and blowing up this, that, and the other thing, it's surprising, despite the fact that it was...
Well, there was another camp, you know, on the other side of the lake, which was a regular camp.
Vernon.
That Vernon, yeah.
Oh, I see.
So people didn't pay too much attention to it because we're in proximity, you know, fairly close proximity to the other. They wouldn't know that we were completely different.
Yeah.
So they were accustomed.
That would be it.
They were accustomed to hearing explosives and so on and so forth.
That
you
makes
see?
Sense. Interesting, sir. Very interesting indeed.
We came to Victoria and settled on him.